now with over 25 years of experience integrating mental health and spirituality, the author of Reclaiming Authenticity, When Ancestors Weep, and Redeeming the Bereaved. Here is Dr. James Hauck.
Alrighty, good evening, everybody, wherever you are in the world at this time. Welcome to Reclaiming Authenticity, finding one's courage to reclaim that which has always been in you. And more importantly, finding the courage to discover who you are and have always been. Very excited to be with you here tonight and every other Wednesday evening at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 6 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. And if you've been following me now for some time, you know that each and every week these broadcasts are dedicated to the integration of spirituality and our mental health, all within the context of our relationships with ourselves, others, and God or the divine. It always brings us back to relationships and the quality of relationships that we have. So how is your heart today? I hope your heart is well, and I hope you are well. And I pray that if you are struggling today, you will find the rest and the comfort and the peace you so need, so desire. I'm Dr. James Hauck, and if you would like more information about me, or maybe you just want to leave me your comments about tonight's show, just invite you to visit the website. It's www.bbsradio.com/reclaiming authenticity. Or if you want to have a more direct approach, you can shoot me an email right on the Reclaiming Authenticity website. It's www.reclaiming-authenticity.com. I'll say that again, www.reclaiming-authenticity.com. And if you would like to call in and be part of the show this evening, that number is 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. And I will be taking your calls after the break. So don't be shy, call in, and let's have a nice conversation. And just in case you cannot spend the entire hour with me here tonight, these broadcasts are certainly podcasted. In case you want to go back and listen again, or you can go back into the archives and listen to previous shows. Okay, all you need to do is just get on the website, that www.bbsradio.com/reclaiming-authenticity, and then you can look up whatever shows by just clicking on the archives. And then you just pull up what you had missed, or if you want to go back and listen to something again, feel free to do that. And I'm also pleased to say that these podcasts are also available for download on Audible and Amazon Music, as well as this particular show and others also replay on WNEW 102.7 FM. That's out of New York on the weekends. And I believe it is Saturday morning or Saturday afternoon, but you can get on their website and you can see when it's scheduled to broadcast. So, again, welcome to the show. And as I said just a little while ago, that if you've been following me for some time, you know that I always like to take a moment, because we always have new listeners who just need to, for one reason or another, just be brought up to speed. What is Reclaiming Authenticity? So at the beginning of these shows, I always like to share just my personal belief that all of us come into the world already equipped and graced with everything that we need for this life, in terms of what exactly is our giftedness, and what are our skills, what is our talent, our strengths, our character traits, so on and so forth. And how we live our giftedness, let's say, is in and through various relationships. In other words, it always comes back to relationships, especially what we have brought into this world. And this aspect is very important when considering who we are, because although we may have similar gifts and skills and talents and strengths and character traits, no two people express these identically. So in other words, each of us have a thisness about us that cannot be duplicated. You know, yeah, it's true that people can try and imitate how we do things, or we might try to imitate somebody else, but nobody has the ability to duplicate us, because within us lies what the 12th century scholar John Don Scotus referred to as aceitas, a thisness, a uniqueness, if you will. But unfortunately, millions of people never have the chance to discover their uniqueness because society still puts it out there and tells us to look elsewhere instead of looking within. In other words, look for what you seek in all the wrong places. You know, we're told to look for that thickness in all the externals of life, or the accumulation of things, our accomplishments, even the accolades. But really, this is not where our thisness, our uniqueness, and aceitas are to be found. Instead, it's the full expression of who we are is to be found within, at the soul level. And yet, when you think about it, we often receive our deepest physical, emotional, psychological, even spiritual wounds in and through relationships. And moreover, often we go along in life, and maybe due to some unpleasant experiences, we may tend to hide our giftedness. We just don't want anybody to see it. We don't want anybody to recognize it. We don't want anybody to know about it because, well, you know, maybe we were told that we were never going to amount to anything, or maybe we hide that giftedness so it does not get exploited. Or, you know, we hide it because, well, we just got very good at hiding our pain or hiding our suffering. Right. And it's kind of ironic that these relationships that I've been talking about just might be within our own families, coworkers, and friends. And yet, transformation, that spiritual transformation, that soul transformation is possible when we heal ourselves through forgiveness, kindness, and compassion. And over time, we learn how to love ourselves and to be gentle with ourselves. Because when we are compassionate with ourselves, we then can be compassionate with others. And when we have forgiven ourselves, and I'll just say from the outset, forgiveness is a process. It takes time. So whenever we have forgiven ourselves, we can then be more forgiving with another. And when we're able to live in gratitude with ourselves, we then will discover how this really opens up our hearts to see and live in gratitude with others. And ultimately, when we are able to truly know ourselves as a soul and live from our soul, it opens us up to understand the potential in others to be able to see themselves as soul. So, transformation, first and foremost, begins with us. And yet, there is so much more to us than what we have become so far. And this is really what reclaiming authenticity is all about, having that courage to reclaim that which has always been in you and to be able to reclaim who you have always been. Or, as the author Anthony DeMello puts it in his book, A Journey, I'm sorry, it's The Heart of the Enlightened, but he writes A Journey Without Distance. And he says, the spiritual quest is a journey without distance. You travel from where you are right now to where you have always been, from ignorance to recognition, for all you do is see for the first time what you have always been looking at. Whoever heard of a path that brings you to yourself, or a method that makes you what you have always been? Spirituality, after all, is only a matter of becoming what and who you really are. Okay, and like I said, this is actually what reclaiming authenticity is all about. So, as I like to sum it up in a nutshell, namaste. Because I see myself as a soul of light, this allows me to greet your lighted soul of who you are. So we must first look within and see our beauty as a soul and hear our beauty as a soul, and to know our beauty as a soul. And as my teacher is also fond of saying, beauty is most often spoken of with reference to worldly relationships and objects. We do not use this word beauty with regard to the physical features of a man or a woman or an expensive object that promotes your status in society. And yet how beauty is perceived is a reflection of the mind's inner purity and goodness. However, as long as the soul is bound within nature's laws of cause and effect, the deepest essence of beauty, that is the soul, cannot be directly experienced. See, we can read about the soul, we can listen to somebody talk about the soul, but unless you fully experience yourself as a soul, transformation is not going to occur. But, you know, many people find it very difficult, if not downright resistant, when it comes to truly discovering themselves as that soul. I mean, it's almost as if they, you know, consider discovering of who I am really as being too high of a cost to pay in terms of what exactly I might be charged to let go of. What do I have to give up? What do I have to let go of in order to take on something better? But when you think about it, in the end, and everybody's going to have this end, when the body is in its transition, we have to let go of everything. Everything that we thought we have accumulated in this life. We have to let go of degrees that we've earned, or homes that we paid for, or families. What about our savings accounts and 401ks? We even have to let go of, you know, right down to those family secrets that were once promised to, let's say, to be taken to the grave. We have to let go of everything. So whatever we know, we identify ourselves with that and thus limit our understanding of who we truly are. So all in all, Richard Rohr, just a very fine theologian in his book, The Immortal Diamond, The Search for Our True Self, he writes that your true self is who you are and always have been in God. So, welcome to tonight's show. That was just the warm-up. And this show is entitled Silent Expectations, Deafening Transformation. Well, this is the time of the year. I'm having fun just counseling kids, you know, the kids, I say kids, but, you know, kids, teenagers, even college graduates, as they transition from all the hard work that they have been doing and has brought them to this very moment of like, hey, you're ready. You are ready to graduate. And I typically hear from one, if not many, of the students or the kids that I counsel, like, I don't know if I'm ready. Like, well, your college, your university says you're ready. You're going to get that diploma. And high school student, your high school says you're ready. You're ready to go on to the next level, and so on and so forth. But, you know, people in transition always want more time. They want to be sure. And there's this, like, there's this wave of imposter syndrome that just washes over people, you know, and just, you know, am I really ready? Have I really learned everything that I'm supposed to learn? And, you know, the passing exams and so forth, you know, you've met the requirements, let's say university standards or, you know, your state's Department of Education or something. But now you have to put it into practice. Now you have to do something with that knowledge so that it can be integrated into your life. And then the more faithful we are to integrating sooner or later, a wonderful transformation is going to take place. And that's the whole aspect of transformative learning. Well, let me take you back to the good old days, okay, in school, okay? Hopefully you don't have to go back too far, all right? But in school, you remember that we had to learn in chemistry class that physical alchemy was and is concerned with altering and transforming chemical properties within solid matter such as changing lead to gold. Now, I don't know about you, but in my chemistry class, they didn't give us lead and try to change it into gold. That was just impossible. But nonetheless, we had fun in just that, you know, physical property. Kind of like an ice cube. You know, there's the physical part. It's hard. And then when it melts, it turns into a liquid. And then from there, it transforms to a gas and it is evaporated. Okay, so that's all, looking at, the physical alchemy of how do we change and transform the chemical properties within solid material. But when we start talking about spiritual alchemy, well, that puts us into a different category because spiritual alchemy is concerned with freeing our vast spiritual self, which is being hindered within us by the unrefined parts of ourselves. Things like our fears, our limited personal beliefs, or self-loathing, or any other self-sabotaging behaviors, and so forth. Okay, because spiritual alchemy is vastly more multifaceted. It's very fluid. It's ongoing. You know, it's a continuous purification of our hearts, much like in the same way a tinsmith or a metalsmith will turn, he'll turn up the heat or she will turn up the heat beneath a hopper that contains a raw mineral or a metal. And as this heat is increased over time, this dross appears on the surface or the impurities comes to the surface, only to be skimmed off and it makes the metal purer than what it was before. And then this purification process is repeated over and over again and again, and the heat is turned up even more and higher until the metal reaches its finest purity that it can. Well, let's look at it this way. You know, we too are going through a process of spiritual alchemy when we start talking about authenticity. It's a call. It's an urging to move into higher dimensions of our authentic selves. Because how often does it feel like the heat is being turned up through a past and current events in the world, right? Are things getting hotter? And I'm not talking about climate change here, but it seems like the heat is intensifying in terms of anger and rage and just hostility. And yet, therefore, when going through this process of, say, a spiritual awakening, sooner or later, we are confronted with the fact that there seems to be much more to ourselves than the reality we are living in and what we have grown accustomed. But still, we may find ourselves struggling with how we are triggered by certain events in the world. And yet at the same time, having a more intentional progression in our spirituality, as well as finding the courage to let go of non-life-giving perceptions and experiences in order to embrace more of our higher dimensions, our authentic selves. And certainly a desire to live exclusively from a heart space of pure light and unconditional love. So let's talk about a subject that most of us are uncomfortable with, namely silence. Depending on the kind of day, people are having, many people just can't wait to get home and decompress. All they want to do is relax and maybe enjoy some peace and quiet. We all been there. Nothing wrong with craving some peace and quiet. But, it's not exactly the same thing as being in silence. And here's what I mean. You would think that quiet and silence are the same thing. Not quite. Do you hear the difference? You see, when we think about quiet, we may tend to think that it's the absence of sound, or at least stifling the noise that's around us, let's just say. Okay. We even have noise-canceling earphones and earbuds and soundproof rooms and so forth. But These are helpful in eliminating background sounds, which allow us to work from home or be on conference calls, all without having the distractions, or maybe listen to music more fully without interference. Now, if you don't have a pair of these noise-canceling earphones, I highly recommend that you add this to your list for Santa Claus this year, okay? You will never go back to anything else. Well, that's quiet, right? Silence, on the other hand, is different. See, in a spiritual or a meditative sense, silence is intentionally entering into a state of inner peace, entering into a state of tranquility. And it's more than just quieting our minds by dismissing all of the checklists of things that we have to do. And entering into silence is certainly more intentional because we seek to communicate with God on a soul level, a dimension where words are not necessary, let alone words are not even able to follow this level. One of my favorite stories, I'm sure you've heard me say this a while ago, but one of my favorite stories about Mother Teresa was when she was doing an interview. And she was asked by the interviewer, so exactly what do you say to God when you pray? And she paused for a second and she goes, well, I don't say anything. Okay, well, asked the interviewer, then what does God say to you? She paused and she said with a smile, he doesn't. He also listens. Now that's entering into silence on a soul level. So heart to heart, soul to soul communication, where words would just simply get in the way. And this is what we discover, that human language is actually a hindrance to listening to the cry of our soul. Because you see, we can be in prayer, but if our minds are racing a mile in a minute, we're not in silence. Now, I've got to be the first one to admit to everybody out there that quiet and silence are often interchangeable in the mind of society, okay? And I did a little checking earlier this week, because I've often heard it said that there is sound in silence. And maybe call me nostalgic, okay? But anybody out there old like me, you'll remember the old Simon and Garfunkel song, The Sound of Silence. Okay, but does silence have sound? Or is that just a nice turn of phrase to sell some records? Well, it all depends on who you ask. There are many interpretations out there of sound and silence. And according to Dr. Seth Horowitz of Brown University, he writes that in truly quiet areas, as he writes in his book, The Universal Sense, he says, you can even hear the sound of air molecules vibrating inside your ear canals or the fluid in your ears themselves. Now, others may interpret silence as a moment when something is left unsaid because words themselves are unnecessary. It could cause a gap in the conversation when silence itself replaces words. You may have been in a crowd, people are just talking or at a party, and about every seven minutes, everybody stops. And then it starts up again, the conversation stirred up. About every 7 minutes. I don't know if that's like a collective pause where people have to take a drink of water or what. But just be more mindful of that whenever you're out or even with your family. There's a lot of conversation going on. Not every 7 minutes, there's just a pause. Now, silence can also be an indication of empathy. When we are really tuning in to how the other person is feeling about what they're saying. And, we're listening more to the tone of their voice rather than the speed, and rather than the actual words, I would say, as in there's an awareness of pain and suffering in others that's so deep that words cannot express it adequately. So in one sense, you can say that silence has sound, but more accurately, let's say that silence has vibration, a vibration that can not only be heard by our ears and interpreted in our minds, but it's also felt deep within. And this is the characteristic of silence that requires no words. But just as we have the capacity for language, we also have the same capacity for vibration. And this is why we need to realize that when we choose the words we say, they too carry with them not only the sound of energy, but they also have the power to heal or the power to wound. Now, if you remember the movie, Mr. Holland's Opus, you recall that Mr. Holland was a music teacher. Richard Dreyfuss was Mr. Holland. Okay, great, great actor. So, Mr. Holland was a music teacher. He was a lover of music. But he had a son who was born without the sense of hearing. Kind of ironic, and he struggled with this for many, many years. But as his son grew up, he loved to work on older cars, and his son used the mechanic's stethoscope, let's just say, to listen to the engine's vibration. And he would be able to feel if the engine was running smoothly or if something in the engine was misfiring. And an underlying, very subtle message in that movie was that human beings can be attuned to higher and higher vibrations that also connect us with higher parts of ourselves. And this even helped Mr. Holland put on a high school concert in which the sounds of his orchestra, well, they were hooked up to bright lights so that every note, every drum beat, and even every clash of the cymbals resonated with exploding flashes of colorful lights. And it was really, truly astonishing to watch. Well, we can feel sound, and we can feel silence, because after a sound is produced, vibration continues. We could even listen to our own heartbeats through a stethoscope, but more importantly, we feel the vibration of our hearts. And when we experience forgiveness and are able to release the negative energy and the pain that we've been hanging on to, you know, those aspects of ourselves that no longer serve us, we tune in to the higher frequencies or vibrations, as it were. I mean, think of it as a music tuner, you know, who's using a tuning fork by first striking the prongs, you know, thereby releasing a perfect wave pattern, and then adjusting the sound of an instrument so that the two vibrations are in sync. Same thing. You know, even scripture reminds us of the importance of entering into silence through prayer and meditation so that we can benefit from that kind of attunement. The vibration takes us into another level of awareness. I'm convinced of it. In fact, this is what, you know, the gurus and the swamis and the yogis teach, that in order to find God, you must first know how to enter into silence. And many ancient and contemporary practitioners of meditation have often used chanting of sacred sounds to help them be in sync with higher vibrations, such as chanting the sacred sound of Om. And I remember that back in the 90s, I remember how science discovered that when we chant Om, a vibration of sound is felt through our vocal cords that clears and opens up our sinuses. And the scientists also discovered that chanting Om also has cardiovascular benefits. It reduces stress and it relaxes the body, that brings down the blood pressure to a normal level and the heartbeats within a regular rhythm. So the more attuned we are with the presence of God, the more we experience the empathetic resonance. It's the resonance of our soul coming into the resonance with the soul of God. And what we discover in being more fully connected to the soul of God then is that we are connected to things that bring us great joy, as well as being connected to things that may be a little bit disturbing and cause us great suffering. But still, when we embrace all to be an extension of God's presence, grace, and healing, people who are looking and listening for God's presence, grace, and healing. So in other words, we embrace all things in order to create a space for transformation to occur in all persons. And as transforming people, we cannot pick and choose when and where and why and how God will use us. Instead, since we expect that God is more than able to understand and embrace all aspects of our lives, then should we not be willing to be the same for ourselves and others? So think of it this way. If we really want to be used by God as healers, it should not come as a surprise that we're going to be placed in circumstances where there is pain, sorrow, and suffering. And if we want God to grant us ancient wisdom, well, it should not come as any surprise that we're going to be placed in situations where people are, let's say, more impulsive and lack insight. So then that ancient wisdom can come through. And if we want God to use us as peacemakers, then it should be no surprise that we will be placed in times of war, chaos, and even death. Well, I would really love to hear what's on your heart about this subject of sound and vibration and silence. So if you'd like to call in, that number is 888-627-6008, and I'll be taking your calls after the break. Again, you are listening to Reclaiming Authenticity, and I'm your host, Dr. James Houck, and I'll be back with you in 1 minute. Welcome back. I'm Dr. James Houck, and you're listening to Reclaiming Authenticity. Well, welcome back to the show, Silent Expectations, Deafening Transformation. And earlier in the broadcast, I was talking about how we often crave peace and quiet, but we can be very uncomfortable with silence. Okay, not quite the same thing. We must not only be comfortable with silence, but also being comfortable in silence. See, silence does carry sound, and with that sound, there is vibration. And there's more to silence than just waiting to talk. Okay. And in counseling therapy, whenever a client is silent, it's often understood as displaying some form of inner resistance, you know, of not wanting to talk as an act of defiance, let's say. Well, this isn't always the case. You know, the silence isn't a bad thing. Because if there's one lesson that I've learned over the years is that suffering and silence often go hand in hand. Not always, but more than likely it goes hand in hand. And this is another way to understand the vibration of silence. That when a person or people believe that they are forced into silence, they may also believe that they have no voice. And that's just not true. Because how do we reach beyond the stories into the silences that they hide? And so when I was teaching students to go into the counseling profession, I would always tell them, Listen for what is not being said. Listen for what cannot be said. Because in that space, we hold the space for another story to emerge. In fact, to work for peace, we may have to be exposed to non-peaceful situations. And the same is true that if we work to be more and more authentic, we're going to be, you know, we're going to find ourselves at times being exposed to inauthentic people and situations. And when we find ourselves in that situation, the question for us then is that when we listen for God, what do we hear? What don't we hear? So another very important aspect of being in silence and listening to what's not being said and just being content with silence is contemplation. Because contemplation helps us reclaim our authentic selves as the silence awakens the deepest desires of our soul. Now, before I fully understood the value of contemplation, I've used silence as not only the absence of noise, but also the absence of God. And to be quite honest, I knew that silence was there, but I didn't know how to enter it or how to listen for God in the silence. But you know, the more I stayed with it, the more I worked through my questions, the more I contemplated and so forth, I am convinced that it's in the silence. That's where God likes to hang out. That's listening for God on a much deeper, deeper inward level. And this inward journey is going to lead us to confront our fears and our prejudices and our resentments. It's going to lead us to confront our bitterness or moments of being, you know, gratitude or hatred. And these wounds, these unhealed wounds, keep us from discovering higher truths about ourselves and really learning how to walk in forgiveness and gratitude and love. Now, interestingly, contemplation is a powerful endeavor. And yet, contemplation is nothing to be afraid of, even though it takes tremendous courage to change from what you have known or what you know as comfortable to something that invites us to heal and heal others. So you see, contemplation, if done correctly, will bring us to a place of vulnerability and perceive all that which we think is lacking in ourselves. But much more than this, contemplation also brings us to the place of realization of our potential for transformation and transcendence. See, my mind and ego just simply couldn't comprehend how God communicates when I hear nothing. In fact, in some ways, I was like David in Psalm 130, you know, out of the depths, I cry to you, O Lord, Lord, hear my voice. Let your ears be attentive to my cry for mercy. But if you, Lord, kept the record of sins, who could stand? But with you, there is forgiveness so that we can, with reverence, serve you. Now, although most people are very uncomfortable with silence, or they might even convince themselves that God is uninterested in their circumstances, silence is actually where we connect with the living presence of God. Now, so for example, let's just say that we don't enter into silence just for the sake of ridding ourselves of whatever sounds of the day we want to escape. Okay, many people would say, well, nothing wrong with that. I've had a hard, stressful day. It's a welcome relief. I'm right there with you. But, you know, on the contrary, we purposefully enter into silence with God in order to experience just a depth, or as I mentioned before the break, this empathetic resonance more clearly. Now, to further grasp this truth, a little experiment, okay? Let's contemplate the silence of water. That's right, the silence of water, H2O, okay? And if you've ever noticed, water is really the epitome of silence. In fact, water only makes a sound when it's moving against another surface, such as being poured into a glass, or when we swallow it, or maybe when water is running over rocks or crashing against the shore when the wind creates its waves. And yet, when water is still, this inaudible silence of water communicates how it's filled with life that gives life to all who depend upon it. And a great movie, if you're like me, your queue grows very, very long of all the movies that you want to get around to watching, but this one at the top of the queue. A great movie that communicates this truth, excuse me, is the 2013 film, The Cherokee Word for Water. And in this movie, it followed the work that led Wilma Mankiller to become the first contemporary female chief of the Cherokee Nation. I mean, I highly recommend it. Just a great storyline, very powerful. And there's many times where people are encouraged to listen to the water. Now, here's another great exercise. You know, the next time you drink water, just stop for a second. Meditate on the characteristics of light and the sound that water makes. You know, contemplate how the molecular structure of water, you know, H2O, gives life to our human breath, that is, our oxygen and carbon dioxide, O2 and CO2. And consider how God has breathed life into us and where we feel the breath and matter and movement of God in our lives. Breath, matter, and movement. Wa ma chi. Now, to take this understanding one step further, as we swallow water, enter into the silence of gratitude for water's life-giving properties. I mean, we all need it. And deeply connect with how the essence of water helps us discover our inner voice, so that we can be a voice for those who have no water, let alone those who are unable to speak. And this was a phenomena, you know, that author Vashti Bhutalia understood all too well. And this is something I shared in the last broadcast a couple of weeks ago, you know, because in her book entitled The Other Side of Silence, she wrote about how 50 years later, the people of India and Pakistan still grieved the history of the partition of 1947. She also noticed that when people she interviewed about, you know, tell me how life has changed for you since then, the men and women not only told their stories differently, but she also noticed how the women had more periods of silence in their story. And that caught her attention. Because you see, if their husbands or sons were around, well, the husbands and sons would pretty much take over the interview, making the women lapse into a sort of silence. And she noticed that this was not uncommon, because many oral histories, oral traditions, have been written about the difficulty of speaking to and speaking with women, often learning to listen differently, often listening to the hidden nuances or the half-said thing. So all in all, it was the silence that was sometimes more eloquent than the speech itself. So one of the aspects I'm discovering is that attuning to higher dimensions of spirituality, of who we are, we indeed hear God and the universe more clearly. However, living daily in higher dimensions also awakens us to higher levels of silence. And ultimately, as we become aware, we also accept and allow ourselves to be carried by the grace of God. And I'm sure you all heard or read the poem, Footprints in the Sand. It's a classic. And it's a poem based on Christian beliefs and describes a person's dream in which he or she is walking on a beach with God. And as they are walking along, analogous of the person's various experiences in life, they leave two sets of footprints in the sand. Now, suddenly, the two sets of footprints become one after a while, especially the lowest and most hopeless moments of that person's life. And near the end of the dream, when questioning God, believing that the Lord, you must have abandoned me, you've abandoned your love during those times, God gives this explanation that it was during your times of trial and suffering that when you only see one set of footprints, it was during that time that I carried you. And you know, perhaps if we could enter into a higher dimension of silence, we just might awaken to the lesson that silence does not automatically mean the absence of God. But rather, silence is calling us to resonate with the calling to become an answer to prayer for others. And so as we go throughout this life, and depending on our experiences, we start to question what used to be true for us. And I think that's very healthy. You know, what fits? What doesn't fit? Where do I belong? Where do I not belong? And so forth and so on. You know, so for example, ever since childhood, we have a certain way in which we see ourselves and others and God and the world at large. And when we've gone through, say, an experience that really shakes us up or even shatters our assumptions, we feel as though nothing makes sense anymore. That is very common. I also think it's also very normal. You know, in other words, so we don't seem to have a sense of our bearings, let alone knowing which way is up. And it doesn't mean that God takes delight in just shattering our assumptions, but this is a very necessary task at times. And this could be very unnerving, a very unnerving state or place that we find ourselves in, especially if we feel like all of what we have known is starting to crumble and evaporate. And we can become so unsure of not only ourselves, but also whether or not if all that we see is all that there is. And yet we can weather those storms. We may also discover that something greater than ourselves is now tugging at our soul. Call it a stronger nudge from God, or a more intense dimensional energy, or even a hunger that resonates deep within us by compelling us to go and search and discover the vastness of who we truly are. And as we go on this journey, I guarantee you, we're going to discover that there are things that we just simply need to identify with and let go of and transform in order to embrace this higher, more intense dimension and dimensions. So in other words, rising above the negative mental, emotional, physical, and even spiritual triggers that keep us from experiencing the fullness, the unconditional love of God. And this phenomenon is at the very heart of a multidimensional understanding of spirituality. It's interesting that in the Oglala Lakota tradition, Frank Fool's Crow, who lived late 1800s, I think he was born in 1890 and he died somewhere around 1989, he taught that in order to become holy, that is one through whom the Great Spirit could work in and through to heal others, a person must become like a hollow bone. Now, Frank Fool's Crow believed that people are not to seek transformation for their own power and honor, but instead to be a pipeline that connects God and the people. And this process of becoming a hollow bone began when people asked God to rid themselves of anything that would impede them in a way. Remove things such as doubt, and questions, and selfishness, and even reluctance. And as a result, psycho-spiritually transformed people would then need to see themselves as unobstructed conduits, a hollow bone, through whom God could work to bless others. And so it is this hollow bone that is a powerful symbol We're empty in ourselves of everything that hinders and impedes the life of God's Spirit in our lives. And just as we were taught in biology class, bones provide our bodies not only with our physical frame, but also within themselves, bones contain marrow, or a flexible tissue that's responsible for producing blood and supporting the immune system. And yet, in understanding this concept of becoming a hollow bone, we must first acknowledge our need to, metaphorically speaking, die to ourselves. Because a hollow bone is both dead, in that it doesn't contain any blood or marrow, and yet at the same time, it's also alive, because it's the Spirit of God flowing freely in and through us for the benefit of ourselves and others. And this act is not a one-time event, but rather it's an ongoing process of examining and letting go of ourselves in order to take hold of something better for the sake of humanity. God is speaking all the time. What keeps us from hearing God's voice? It is through contemplation that we not only need to stop our mind's chatter, but also open up our hearts regarding how we see and listening to God, especially in silence. Where do we see God in all things? Do we see God in the beauty of a sunrise or the sun's glow in a sunset? Do we focus on hearing God's voice in the cries and laughters of others? How do we feel God in the wind and the rain? Do we hear God in the sounds of owls and eagles and hawks? And similarly, we should not also look for God in the tears of the child, or listen for the voice of God in every heartbreak, or find the voice of God giving us voice to our losses. I'll leave you with one last story. It's a famous story in his book, Night, N-I-G-H-T. Elie Wiesel, he writes about a specific time when suffering in silence took on a new meaning. And he writes in this book, he says, "One day when we came back from work, we saw three gallows rearing up in the assembly place, three black crows. Roll call. The SS troopers all around us, machine guns trained, the traditional ceremony. Three victims in chains, and one of them, a little servant, just a simple, sad-eyed angel. Now, the SS seemed to be more preoccupied that night, more disturbed than usual, because you see, to hang a young boy in front of thousands of spectators was no light matter. And the head of the camp read the verdicts, and all eyes were on this child. He was lividly pale, almost calm, and he was biting his lips. The gallows threw its shadow over him. And this time, the Lagerkapo refused to act as the executioner. So three SS troopers replaced him. The three victims mounted together on the chairs. Their necks were placed at the same moment within the nooses. Long live liberty," cried the two adults. But this child was silent. "Where is God? Where is he?" somebody behind me asked. At a sign from the head of the camp, the three chairs tipped over, and total silence went throughout the camp. And on the horizon, the sun was setting. "Bare your heads," yelled the head of the camp. His voice was very raucous, and we were all weeping. "Cover your heads." And then the march past them began. The two adults were no longer alive. Their tongues hung swollen, blue-tinged. But the third rope was still moving. You see, being so light, the child was still alive. And for more than a half an hour, he stayed there, struggling between life and death, dying in slow agony under our eyes. and we were forced to look him full in the face. He was still alive when I passed in front of him. His tongue was red, his eyes were not yet glazed, and behind me, I heard this same man asking, "So where is God now?" And I heard a voice within me answer him, "Where is he? Where is God? He's right here. He's hanging here on the gallows." See, although most people are uncomfortable with silence, convince themselves that God is uninterested in their circumstances, silence is actually where we connect with the living presence of God. Death does not have the last word. And as a result, we don't enter into silence just for the sake of ridding ourselves of whatever sounds of the day that we just want to get rid of. We purposefully enter into the silence with God in order to experience the empathetic resonance more clearly, to have a deeper soul-to-soul connection. I'm Dr. James Houck, and you have been listening to Reclaiming Authenticity. Thank you again for spending this hour with me, and I invite you to drop me a line and tell me what you thought about tonight's topic, and I would love to hear from you. So tune in 2 weeks from tonight for another broadcast of Reclaiming Authenticity. And everybody have a very meaningful Memorial Day weekend. Everybody be safe if you happen to be out there running around. And please, everybody, behave yourselves. Okay? Good night.
For an answer, or just to leave 1,000 comments, or prodding around to buy a book by Dr. Houck, it's all there. Just wander over to ReclaimingAuthenticity.com and click around. And we'll see you next Wednesday at 9 p.m. Eastern Time, 6 p.m. Pacific, on BBS Radio TV.